What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Student Loan Planner Podcast. Today, you have Lauren and myself, Megan, and we are going to be talking about some interesting situations that we've come across, some client cases, really getting down to business. So how are you, Lauren?
I am doing wonderful. I am so excited that it is finally the warmer weather time of the year. I think it is great to be able to go outside and exercise, and I've been on my workout stuff, so I'm trying to get my summer body together right now.
Ooh, nice. Looking forward to the summer as well. Well, let's go ahead and jump on into some of our topics today. One of the first things we wanted to talk about is payments coming up, right? You were reading an interesting article recently about student loan payments.
Yeah. So, you know, we're always looking for what is the latest and greatest news, trying to stay on top of things. And even just, it was just a general search about student loans to see if there was anything new and exciting versus, you know, what we had been talking about. And the article was all about the idea that payments are beginning for real this time, that there's many indications that there will not be another extension as per like the Biden administration. So I just thought it was interesting that they're like, for real. No, for real. Because we all know how many times they've said for real. And I think some people are actually going to need to go to therapy when they finally do pick up.
Gosh. But trust issues, right?
Yes. So just in case you haven't heard on our recent podcast, what they're doing is that either when the court case is completed or June 30th, which we're all pretty sure that's going to be June 30th now, payments will start 60 days later. So basically that gets rid of all of July, all of August, and you should be expecting payments to start in September. So if you are not ready, you really, really, really this time should get ready. Megan and I don't know for sure that they're going to start, but I am confident that they're not making this up and that they actually do plan to start them at some point. I know a lot of people, when I talk about student loans, they're like, girl, they're going to forgive them all. Like, they're definitely right. Not ever starting this back up again. I will never have to make another payment. They've decided that in their mind, but I don't want you to be disappointed if payments begin in September.
I know. Protect your future self. Get prepared. Know what your payment's going to be. Start factoring that into your budget. We know inflation has been a big factor in a lot of people's spending, and you know, a negative factor in a lot of people's spending and their bills. So just be prepared for when that payment comes in.
You can also take a look at your studentaid.gov and probably even in log into your servicer and find out what your payment should be when you begin again. And so a lot of people have been able to take advantage of the payment being way, way, way back to their 2018 payment, 2019 payment, when income was lower, when they were still in school, you know, all sorts of different things were happening. And they're going to be picking back up at like, you know, $75 when their current payment would be $1,000. That was a consultation I did yesterday, actually. I was like, don't make any changes. So you're definitely going to want to make sure you know what your payment's going to be so that one, like Megan said, you can start saving up for it. But two, you do not want to recertify your income unless it's absolutely necessary if it's going to benefit you to keep up with that lower payment. So that's what we've been helping people a lot with in consultations lately, is understanding when exactly payments will begin, what payment they can expect, and for how long they can expect it. Because there's also some wonky rules about when you will be required to recertify.
Yep. A lot of people probably won't have to update income until later in 2024. So there's a lot of planning opportunity there for those going towards loan forgiveness to maximize their forgiveness overall by keeping those payments really low for as long as possible. One thing to note on checking your servicer portal for your payment, I have gotten a lot of reports from folks specifically who are with Mohila and Nelnet for their loan servicers. When they sign into their accounts, they're seeing what would be the standard 10-year payment as what their next payment is going to be. And it says something like, you know, that payment will kick in September. Don't let that panic you. If that number looks very off to you, it probably is. And Nelnet and Mohila, I know, well, my assumption why these two companies in particular are showing the standard 10-year payment is likely because you were not at Nelnet or Mohila before COVID started, before this COVID forbearance happened. A lot of people are getting moved to Nelnet from Great Lakes because Great Lakes is getting absorbed by Nelnet. So you may have had them prior to moving over to Nelnet. And same thing with MOHELA. You may have had FedLoan or a different servicer because maybe you're with PSLF or maybe you're just with MOHELA. You don't have to be pursuing PSLF to be with MOHELA. But you likely, well, you definitely did not have MOHELA before 2020 because they're a new company, a new servicer. So I think that's some of the rhyme or reason behind why you might be seeing that standard payment. It's likely because you just didn't have them before payments were shut off. That's not to say that you won't have that payment that you had prior to payments shutting off, but it's just not reflecting it currently right now. Probably because they don't have to be showing it right now. Payments are not kicking in within 60 days at this point. So I think it'll start to make more sense the closer we get to August. And I think your account will start to make more sense and the payment in your portal will start to make more sense. But just a note of caution, don't panic if you log in and see a really ugly number. It's probably not accurate. That's probably just their placeholder until they update their systems.
That makes so much sense, too. Like you said, that the people who had to get changed over, it's like, hey, we just threw you to this default thing and they're working yep. behind the scenes because they do actually have to give you the payment that was your 2018, 2019 payment and not the standard, if you will. And yep. they've also been very clear about when people will have to recertify. And this actually ties into a story that I'm going to tell later. But as a little bit of a spoiler alert, you can call in. If you see that standard, you know, this may just be something extra that you do when, like I said, to Megan's point, it's hundreds of people or it was probably thousands of people because we're seeing it on a regular basis with our consults. They're going to have to update it. So you can do nothing. And, you know, right before payments, assuming that it's still looking like this, you're like, oh, my God, then you need to do something. But it probably makes more sense to just wait it out because we know that a lot of changes are happening in the short term.
Yep. And I think that brings us to our next topic point today about how it is pretty clear that the Department of Ed is making some changes to your text files, the TXT files that you can download from your studentaid.gov account. Those are the raw numbers and data that we use for our planning. We run it through our software to figure out an estimated how many months of repayment you've been in, how many months you've been in forbearance, what the interest rates are, what types of loans you had. It gives us a lot of detail, but it's very clear that the Department of Ed is making some changes to these files or kind of scrubbing them, if you will, mm-hmm. right? Is that what you're seeing too?
Yes, that's exactly what I'm seeing. Lots of different changes that are going on with the TXT file. And I always like to think of the TXT file as like your credit report. But we also know that if you've done any real analysis of your credit report, that they can be wrong. So while this is an area that you should be depending on to get the accurate information related to your student loan history and what payment plans, and like you said, it's been the best place for us to be able to do our consultations, we've been seeing a lot of weird things. One of the things I've been seeing recently is 1-1, so January 1st of 2020 as the period of forbearance that has started. In general, what we've been seeing is 3-13 because that's the official start of COVID forbearance. So yet another thing that's like, this doesn't make any sense. And the first time you see it, you're like, oh, maybe it was just this person. Maybe they chose forbearance. But you start seeing it two or three different times. You're like, oh, okay, this is kind of a theme. And they're sure that they didn't make any payments during COVID or they didn't choose forbearance. You know, there's also, though, some good things that are happening. You've seen the portals related to studentaid.gov looking better. And all of this is what they're saying is that they're trying to create a payment tracker. So the idea is that once all this stuff gets straightened out and, you know, why all this stuff is crazy stuff is happening to the TXT file, they're going to say, presto changeo, here's a new starting line. Here's everyone's new payment count based on all these things that we forgive and all these leniencies that we created as per the COVID forbearance. Now we have a clear starting line. You have clear instructions on what you need to do. And also we have this cool payment tracker. So they said that we should expect that in 2024. And I am super excited for it because what they had but pre-COVID was just not a payment tracker. And it was really Nothing. Confusing yeah. for people.
yeah. It's not transparent at all. Yeah, I know. We are, everybody at the Student Loan Planner team, I think we are pumped for this tracker. And we were super excited about this, too, when the PSLF tracker came about with started at FedLoan, then moved over to MOHELA, because it's just a way more transparent way of knowing where you stand when it comes to your forgiveness timeline. Because right now, we can make some educated assumptions based on when you graduated and what your text file says your payment history was. But it would be nice to see it like on a dashboard. It makes sense that you'd be able to see this within your dashboard, right? Because they're tracking it. We know that when you get income-driven repayment forgiveness, like the 20 or 25 year forgiveness, it's automatic. They're supposed to automatically shut off your payments once you've hit the 20 or 25 years of equivalent payments. And so if they're tracking it, it would make a lot of sense for them to show us that they're tracking it. And that way we could check for accuracy. So that is something that we're waiting for. They're saying that this is going to be, well, originally they said it was going to be available in summer of 2023. And now they're saying it's going to be available in early 2024. So that's okay. As long as it's coming, I think that's a good thing. And that tracker is really important too, because this account adjustment that's going on right now, the IDR waiver, it's been said on studentaid.gov that if you are someone who's already made the equivalent of 20 or 25 years of payments or been either in repayment or had extended forbearances or qualifying periods towards that timeline, if you've already surpassed the 20 or 25 years, then you should be getting your loans forgiven by August before payments restart. That is literally said on the studentaid.gov website. So if you think you're in that bucket where you think you have had your loans and had repayment history to meet the IDR forgiveness requirements, look out for that notice by August. And if you don't see it, don't panic, because I think that there, we're going to talk about this here in a little bit, but there are some ways that you can dispute inaccuracies in your payment history. All that to say is I think there's going to be some forgiveness coming very soon by August for folks who have been in repayment for a long time. And if you feel like that should be you and that hasn't been happening to your file at that time, then there are some ways you can go about fixing it. So we'll talk about that here coming up.
Yeah. I think what Megan is saying, and what we are saying, is it's time to wake up. If you have been sleeping for the last 3 years, it is time to open your eyes and see how the various things that are taking place right now might be able to benefit you. Yes, we have all really loved the 3 years of forbearance, but you want to get ahead of seeing what's going on, want to understand the process as well as possible so that you can advocate on behalf of yourself if something is not as it should be. So understanding how all this works, at least in some sort of form or fashion, is a key piece of the puzzle so that you can make sure that they give you exactly what you deserve.
Yeah.
Or more. More is good. You know, if they make a mistake, it benefits you.
Well, and some quick hitter things, just to recap the account adjustment or the IDR waiver. It's going under those two kind of blanket names right now. But a couple facts just to know, and you can revisit this all at studentaid.gov as well. We've written a couple articles on this account adjustment and IDR waiver on our website. But quick hitter things that a lot of people have told me they didn't realize. One is that payment history before consolidations is counting towards the forgiveness timeline. I literally had a consultation yesterday where they consolidated in 2014, but they had a lot of payment history before 2014. And they were under the assumption that only payments since that consolidation were going to count. And that's not the case anymore, not with this IDR waiver. So that was exciting to say, no, we actually have another like 8 years we can add. So that's a big point with this IDR account adjustment. Any prior payments, doesn't matter if you were on a standard plan, the extended plan, any payments in the past are going to count towards the forgiveness timeline. Certain forbearances, so 12 months or more of consecutive forbearance, will count. So if you were in residency for 3 years, you used forbearance for those 3 years normally would not count towards the forgiveness timeline, but they do now with the account adjustment. So extended forbearances count. If you have a lot of forbearance on your account from the past, 36 months or more, then all of that forbearance will count as well, even if it's not consecutive. And then consolidations, if you consolidate loans with different payment counts under the account adjustment, the consolidation will be credited with the highest payment count that any one of those underlying loans has. So if you went to school during different time periods, this is significant to you because you probably have payment history on your undergrad loans, for example, that you could apply to your graduate loans that were borrowed later. I still get a lot of those consultations where we're finding extra payments by looking at how this account adjustment can be applied to your specific situation. Anything I missed, though, for quick hitter points to think about?
The only thing I was going to say is deferment. So that's the one other piece of the puzzle. Not in school deferment, unfortunately, but we have been seeing some people actually successfully waive in school deferment on loans that they were not taking for their current education. So as an example, you had some undergraduate loans, you're in grad school, and you automatically go into in-school deferment for all of your loans. Well, those undergrad loans you could have kept paying, but you have to first go back and waive deferment, which is a bit of a process, but it's possible. So in-school deferment in general is not going to count. And a lot of people are not willing to jump through the hoops to waive their past in-school deferment, but it can be done. But the type of deferment that does count is those deferments related to economic hardship. And what's the other type of...
There's also like residency deferment. There's a lot of deferments, and also like what the servicers were doing, because this whole thing is coming about like these weird, like 12 months or 36 months, like why those are relevant is because the Department of Education instructed these servicers in the past that no one could have more than 12 months of consecutive forbearance, and no one could have more than 36 months of cumulative forbearance ever. So that's 3 years of forbearance. But what the servicers were doing was kind of steering people towards forbearance instead of income-driven plans, or instead of looking at alternative options, which was negatively affecting their forgiveness timelines, because originally forbearances weren't counting towards forgiveness timelines. The servicers were kind of taking advantage of forbearance as an easy fix to anybody's problem with payments, and just putting people into forbearance instead of looking at alternative options. And when they ran out of forbearance, because they hit the 36-month cap, they were then using deferments and classifying them as a different payment pause. So that's why this is all coming about, is because there was a lot of misuse and abuse of forbearance and deferment in the past that negatively impacted people's ability to get credit towards forgiveness. So that's why they're trying to clean this up. That's why those numbers kind of seem arbitrary, but they're actually
not,
you know, not. Yeah,
they're
exactly.
They're kind of not, right?
Another point with forbearance, too, is that you can request that shorter-term forbearances be counted towards forgiveness. So let's say you know you were steered into forbearance, because another thing that servicers used to do was when you had to update income, if they were running behind or whatever the situation was, they might push you into forbearance for a couple months so they could process your income recertification form, which that is not a good thing. You probably were okay with making those payments during that time, but since they put you into forbearance, those couple months there didn't count towards loan forgiveness. And if they did that every year, that's a lot of months adding up over time that aren't counting. So if it wasn't 12 months of consecutive forbearance that you have on your payment history, or if it wasn't quite 36 months total of cumulative forbearance, but you do have like 10 months total over the course of 5 years, or 20 months, you know, randomly over the course of some time, go ahead and submit a complaint to studentaid.gov. There's an FSA complaint process on the website that you can submit a complaint and just explain that you would have and could have been paying payments during that time, and your servicer pushed you into forbearance, so you would like to request that those time periods count. That is worth it, especially for someone who's really close to loan forgiveness. If they turn around and count those months, that can get you a lot closer to your to you being done with loans.
100%. And to your point, you know, you said it's 36 months in aggregate. And so if you've got 24 months in aggregate, like you said, that off and on over the course of years, it's highly likely that every time your recertification came up, they threw you into forbearance. Every time you called and asked a question, they threw you into forbearance. And we actually had a lawyer client reach out to us at one point, because sharing is caring. So if there's things that are working for you all out there, please do share with us, because that helps us help other people. But what she did was write a letter, and she marked down every single time that she was thrown in administrative forbearance and said, I should not have been. I would have been willing to continue to pay during that time, and I want my payments counted. So it was a pretty long, drawn out process. We shared that process with some other people, a template that she created, and it helped a lot of people. But now we have this new, much quicker, much easier way, which is filing the complaint. Mm-hmm. But you first, once again, need to understand what's happening. I don't know when I was in or out of payment. I don't know what's going on. You've got to look either at studentaid.gov or get that TXT file, which is an ugly file to look at. Like you said, we got a pretty cool conversion thing we do at a student loan planner. So we can help you with that. But you first have to have a baseline of, like you said, what might I be missing out on in order to know whether or not you should be one of those people submitting a complaint and what you're complaining about specifically.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And that might be a good segue into our complaint process. So if you do have a complaint for your payment history for either PSLF or the longer term forgiveness or this forbearance we're talking about, when do you go to studentaid.gov and when do you go to your loan servicer? So let's talk about that because there are some differences here and there's a kind of an order of operation. If you are thinking that there is a discrepancy or an issue with your payment count towards public service loan forgiveness, you want to first, I would suggest, call MOHELA to inquire about that time frame, see if they're still maybe processing an employment certification form that could clear that up. If that's not the case, if they're not counting it for a specific reason, maybe that reason is not accurate, you can submit a reconsideration request form. This is done through studentaid.gov. This is specifically for PSLF people, though, at this time. It's called Reconsideration Request Form. You could probably Google that in the search bar in studentaid.gov. It's going to ask you if you have an issue with the employer that they're deeming maybe not eligible, or if you're having an issue with time frames not being counted correctly towards your qualifying payment count. So it's important, just like you said, Lauren, to know what time frames are inaccurate so you can specifically line them out. The more specific you can be in this complaint, the better, the faster they could probably resolve the issue because they know what they're looking for. So that's kind of the order of operation for PSLF folks. Start with MOHELA. Then if we don't get anywhere with MOHELA, submit a reconsideration request. Now, this is kind of future thinking, but if you're someone who is having an issue with your income-driven repayment count that you're going to see in this payment tracker in 2024, there is a complaint process within the studentaid.gov website as well. It is separate from that reconsideration request form because that's more specifically towards PSLF folks, but it's at studentaid.gov/feedback-center. And that's where you can submit a complaint about just about anything. So again, same rules, be as specific as possible about what your complaint is, and the ombudsman group will get back to you on some kind of resolution. Usually the requirement before you complete this is that you communicate with your servicer first. So I think that should still be the case, is always try to communicate with the servicer about it, see if there's a resolution. If not, then you can use these other complaint processes.
Yeah, no, that's excellent information because, like I said, we've also been seeing with PSLF specifically, you know, we've done a lot of talking about the IDR and TXT files looking wonky in general. Even in the MOHELA website, we've been seeing some things that don't really match up. For the most part, they've been getting fixed. I was actually just thinking about a client who emailed me recently and said that they got full forgiveness. They were, you know, we had our consultation. I was like, no, you guys should be eligible for 100% forgiveness. And they're like, are you sure? And I looked at the thread. It was 62 emails that we exchanged between finishing the consultation and them actually getting forgiveness because so many things went wrong. They're like, we've got zero payments. Now we've only got three payments. You said they were all going to be forgiven. I want my money back. Like, oh, I'm like, gosh. Hang tight. We did it right. So, you know, you might be seeing some wonky stuff in MOHELA. First thing is to reach out to them, maybe over the phone, reach out via the portal. There is an option to re-upload documents that you've already submitted in the past. But to Megan's point, that reconsideration request form, they're creating these processes so that they can get to people faster. So you don't want to be one of the people clogging up the system by just kind of like going all over the place. Like the reconsideration request form may be the best place to go because sometimes you re-upload something that you've already submitted and now it's getting labeled duplicate. And then they're having to sort through that. And it, you know, just becomes a whole rigmarole if you're not following the various channels that they're creating to be able to get the process done efficiently.
Yes, that's a great point. So duplicate forms, let's talk about that next. That has to do with PSLF. So this is public service loan forgiveness, folks. you could potentially get a employment certification form labeled as a duplicate if, just as it sounds, you've submitted the same one twice. And so this could be an issue because, again, it might delay when they're actually able to process your initial form if they're having to filter through like all the ones that you've sent them. So when does it make sense to submit a new employment certification form? Let's kind of talk through that, strategize through that. Public service loan forgiveness, it has that employment certification form that verifies your employment. You may have multiple forms because you've had multiple different eligible employers in the past. That's okay. When you complete the employment certification form online through the PSLF help tool, it's going to help you list out all of your prior employers. It's going to have you, it used to have you print out each of those individual forms to send off to those corresponding employers and get their signatures. And then you would upload that to the portal and they would review it. Now the process is digital. We'll talk a little bit more about that here in a moment. But let's say you're someone who did this already, like last year. You submitted all of your forms for all of your different employers. You uploaded that to the MOHELA portal or you mailed it to the MOHELA address. And let's say you haven't gotten any updates, right? Because I think you said you had a client with this situation.
Yep. Zero updates she's gotten. And it is multiple employers, like six. And I'm like, are you sure? Where did you send it? What did you know, what happened exactly? And she's like, no, I did. I have all of that. She had all the information. And so, yeah, it's been crickets for her. And this is from back in October. And we've been hearing like 4 or 5 months. Like, first of all, they're getting some sort of confirmation, like processing. Then we're getting bad information. But there's been communication. She's got nothing. So I'm like, something probably didn't go right here.
I was going to say, that doesn't sound right. So if you've had crickets and you submitted your documentation, I'd say 2 months or more ago, then that's probably something you want to just look at a little closer because you should get some kind of correspondence. So let's think about the order of operation here if this is you. So if this situation sounds like what you're going through, what I would do first is I would give MOHELA a phone call. Give them a call, and then what you would ask is, hey, I just want to confirm that you received my forms, my employment certification forms. And they'll ask you how you sent it, what method of delivery, and they'll let you know if they have it in the queue or not. And if they don't see it at all, that's probably an issue. Maybe it got lost in the mail if you mailed it. It should be there if you uploaded it to the portal. That shouldn't be a question. Like, that's a really easy way for them to track the forms. But some folks I know are not at MOHELA, so they cannot upload their forms to MOHELA's portal. They have to mail it initially. So if that's the case, if they can't find your forms, what you could do is you could mail. So you could do one of two things. You can either re-mail a copy of what you already submitted, that you already got signed. I would just suggest sending it certified mail to MOHELA's address and confirm the address with them on the phone and send it certified mail. That could be one route. Or you can redo the employment certification forms through the PSLF help tool. Mm-hmm. I know that might be a little annoying, but you can reference all the ones that you've already done. Just plug and chug that information. And what's cool about the new PSLF help tool or the updated help tool is you can now send a digital signature request to your employer. So it sends them an email. I actually acted as a spy today and sent myself an email as if I was an employer. I put my own email in as the employer to see what would happen, to see what the employer would see when they get an employment certification form sent to them for signature. And it took probably, I'd say like 10 minutes to get to me. So it wasn't instant, which not totally surprising. It didn't go to spam, though. It went straight to my inbox, and it comes from Federal Student Aid. It says Federal Student Aid via DocuSign, and it comes from a DocuSign.net email. And it has just some verbiage that says, we're requesting an electronic signature for PSLF for this person. This employee is requesting your electronic signature as part of their public service loan forgiveness application. Prior to signing the employee's form, make sure to confirm your employer identification number and their employment period. And it has an envelope access code. I've been getting a lot of emails about this lately because people have been starting to use this form and the employer hasn't been able to find this access code. I think this is what they're referencing. I guess it's called an envelope access code. And there's like a 5-digit number that they have to be able to access the form. So it's on that initial email. It's just called envelope access code. But there's a button for me to click that says review document. So I'm going to click that now. We're going to go through this live together.
Right. The thing I love about Megan is that she is the one that's like step by step. I'm going to get to the very bottom of this so that we can give people the best information. Because sometimes we're not able to provide, like you said, what we can see on our end is limited in comparison to what the borrower can see. But now we're able to put a really detailed email together for clients that we work with to say, hey, this is exactly what's going to happen. Here's where you might hit a bump in the road. Don't be confused by this. And here's how you proceed forward. I love that about you.
Oh, thank you. I'm a little detective. So then what it does when I click that button to review the document, it says, please enter the access code to view the document. So this is what the employer, the person you sent it to, is going to see. So I just copied and pasted that access code in there. And then I click validate. Let's see what it does next. So now it's taking me to a DocuSign form.
So the key piece of information is that the access code is in the email. So reading is fundamental is what you're saying.
Yes.
People have not been able to find it, but it is in that initial email that you get.
It is in that initial email. Yeah. And it does say access code. So that is the code. And it's kind of small. Like okay. Maybe they should make it bigger or bold or something. Maybe
I was gonna
that's
say, is it
to your...
obscure. It's a little obscure, right?
It's the same like font size as everything else, but it's not in bold. It's not underlined. It's not highlighted, nothing like that. So just make sure they're looking for that. And then it does pull up the full employment certification form. It's already filled out. It's wanting me to check the box to agree for an electronic signature disclosure. And then I'm assuming I'm not going to continue through because I'm not an eligible employer. Let me put that out there. I am right. Not an eligible employer.
Megan's certifying her own employment right now. She's going to get her forgiveness today.
Nope. So it seems like it'll just take me to a place to sign and then that'll get it submitted straight to the Department of Education. And in the Department of Ed's side, like your portion of studentaid.gov, you can track the progress of this signature under the loan forgiveness tab. Click on public service loan forgiveness. I think you could track it there where it just shows that it was sent, you know, to the employer, the email was sent to the employer, that it was signed, and then it was submitted. That's cool. I'm glad we were able to go through that live today so people have an idea of what to expect.
Absolutely. I think that's super helpful.
Yeah. But bringing it back, I think we were talking about just troubleshooting, like if we needed to submit another form. I think we got that down. If you're someone who hasn't heard anything about your employment certification forms that you've submitted, it's probably a good idea to either resend the ones that you already completed or redo the forms with the new electronic signature process, and that should get it submitted. Now, if you're someone who is pursuing PSLF, you've submitted all your forms, but there's either certain time periods missing or certain employers missing from your tracker, I think the first order of operation there to fix any issues is to first communicate with MOHELA. So I'd give them a call, say, hey, I submitted all my employment certification forms for XYZ employers. The dates, you know, some of those dates have qualifying payments, others don't. Can you explain to me why I'm missing some dates? And that usually can be, I've from what I've heard, and you tell me if you've heard the same thing, the PSLF folks now are doing a lot better at being able to articulate why your tracker isn't looking correct. Now, that might not be the case for everybody. So don't send me spam or
hate
send
mail.
Me an angry email. But from the clients that I've worked with, I've heard that they've gotten better. That may not mean they're awesome, but maybe they're better. So they should be able to help you identify what's going on, if you need to take action or not, or if it's just a waiting game. Because a lot of this is a waiting game for them to just update and process your prior forms, which might take, like you said, 2 to 4. I've been saying 2 to 6 months. Mm-hmm. But all the while, you should be getting communication to some extent that they've received the forms, that you'll get an, you know, one payment count update that might not look like it makes sense. Maybe the payment count looks really low, but you should be getting more as time goes on. But anything you'd like to add to that?
I think you covered it. You said, hopefully, if you're a PSLF person out there, this is giving you some solace, because I know people are losing sleep. Like you said, I mentioned the client that I exchanged 62 emails with. And you can imagine, it's super duper stressful for people. You're like, there's a lot riding on this. You know, I've put in my time. I either am eligible for full forgiveness, or I think that I'm getting really close. And I don't want to make 50 more payments that I didn't mean to make, or 20 more payments, or even 5 more payments that are unnecessary. I just want to know like where I am, so that I can be done with this. And so, you know, someone, if you think you have 100 payments and you get a document that says you have five, like, it freaks you out. Reasonably so. So
understandably, yes, for sure. So definitely not trying to shame the folks that like have been getting panicky about their payment counts. We can absolutely understand, but we just want to reinforce that trust the process. You will be getting a lot of communication. If you haven't, we talked about how to fix that. So hopefully this helps some folks out there with any problems with the PSLF payment count. And then, of course, if there are legitimate problems where they're not counting periods that they should be, you can go through that complaint process that we talked about with the reconsideration request form.
Yeah. With that, you know, as you mentioned the word panicky, I was thinking about like kind of the last point that we said we were going to talk about. And it's the, you know, who are the other people that are really panicky right now? Parent Plus people, because they're worried about the double consolidation loophole closing, the window closing, and the opportunity. You know, there's a lot of change happening in the student loan system right now among the federal government. It seems like most of it is, actually, it doesn't seem, most, all of it, let me say that over. There's a lot of change happening in the federal system right now as it pertains to student loans. And all of it has been really, really lenient, or, you know, in favor of borrowers. So, you know, a lot of times we get consultations where people are like, what if they pull the rug from underneath me? What if this goes, you know, poorly? What if, you know, how are they going to screw me over, is the sentiment that's been had. But everything that's happened during COVID has been really, really helpful for borrowers. But one thing they don't seem to be even in the least bit aware of is this double consolidation loophole that exists right now. And the new IDR adjustment was something that kind of pointed it out to me. They didn't say anything. They addressed all these kind of other little nuances, but they didn't address this particular one. And so that lets me know that they still, it's not on their radar yet. But at any point, they could figure it out and they could change rules. And so, you know, we always put like an asterisk when we help people with the double consolidation, is like, hey, this is important. You need to do this sooner rather than later. And also, it could close in the midst of you doing this loophole. But there's been some changes as well, you know, since COVID, or in things that are relevant. So do you want to talk a little bit about that, Megan, and what Parent Plus borrowers should be thinking about?
Sure. Yep. So the process is still working. There's no like word or concern at this point that the loophole will be closing soon. But like you said, there's a lot of changes. So who knows? So if you're someone who needs to be exploring this, sooner the better. That's all we could say there, just for peace of mind. But the folks that have been going through it, and if you plan on going through this in the future, one note just on, I guess, the feedback we've been getting from people who are getting to that last step. So when we do the double consolidation, it's technically 3 consolidations for most cases. That's not always the case, but for most cases, we're doing 3. Because we have to consolidate groups of Parent Plus loans by themselves first, separately. So then we can consolidate the 2 consolidation loans together to wipe out that Parent Plus loan code.
Okay, so let me just say that in layman's terms. So you got 6 loans. You get 3 loans together, that's group A. 3 loans together, that's group B. You know, you consolidate group A, you consolidate group B, you wait. And then that final consolidation is group A and group B getting consolidated together. And now you have that 3rd one.
Correct. Yep. That's a great, I was able to visually follow that very well. Thank you. What our instructions have been is, on that last consolidation, go ahead and apply for the income-driven plan that you want to go on, because that's mostly why people are doing this double consolidation, is they need to get on a cheaper income-driven plan. What we've been finding, especially with MOHELA, is the income-driven application has been getting approved before the consolidation is done. And so what happens is when they process that income-driven application before the last consolidations are done, they're looking at eligibility and they're seeing, nope, these consolidated Parent PLUS loans. So you only have access to that ICR plan. And so that panics people. We've had lots of panicked emails about MOHELA folks just doing this prematurely. They'll get a rejection notice that says, hey, you're actually not eligible for pay or for repay. We put you on ICR. That, of course, is really scary because it seems like the process failed. That's not actually the case. It seems like MOHELA is processing the income-driven application before the consolidation is settled. So our new instructions are that probably makes sense just to apply for the standard plan again, just that fixed amortized plan for the last process. It also makes that last consolidation a little quicker so you don't have to gather your income information quite yet. And then once that consolidation is completely done and you've been approved for the standard plan, then go ahead and apply for the income-driven plan. That should solve most of those problems. There have been some small cases where a representative is still looking at the loan file and saying, no, there were Parent PLUS loans at some point. This isn't eligible for ICR. And it just takes a phone call or two. Maybe you have to get a different representative to look at the file to say, nope, you know, this is a consolidation of two consolidated loans. It's not a consolidation of Parent PLUS loans. Once they see that, once they understand what the order of operation was for your consolidations, then you will be approved for the lower income driven plan. So that's just some notes to those who are maybe going through that double consolidation process or who might be in the future. Some recent problems we've been running into mainly with MOHELA, but probably be safe and do that. Those newer instructions for just anybody that you're ending up with.
Yeah, and I think this speaks to the way that the computer may be saying or looking a little bit different with all these changes that are happening, that it keeps coming up over there. And so this may be the first little inclination that they're getting of like, oh, people are doing this strategy. Like, what is this? Let's look into this more. So hopefully they're not, you know, overdoing their job to the point where they want to like whistleblow and say, hey, we got this double consolidation thing happening over here. Let's stop it. I don't think that, like
I
said,
don't think they would. Like, I know that could be a concern. I don't think these people over there care that much about this. They're probably just like, what is this weird process that people are doing? Yeah. I don't get it. I don't care. But I don't think there's going to be anybody over there like pounding the steps of the courthouse saying, hey, we need to change this. We need to block this. I don't think that's going to be the case. So don't worry.
I don't think that would be the case either. You said people are just trying to get their job done and move on. And even then, it's something that's really helpful. And so to that point, like you said, the government is doing a lot of things that are super helpful. So maybe, you know, they would point out that this is another strategy and this is the additional steps you have to take at some point when they find out about it. And or maybe they'll just get rid of all the stinky rules related to Parent PLUS loans in the first place.
I know. Yeah.
So then there's no double consolidation necessary. Like, that's what they really need to do. So,
man, then what am I going to be a specialist in? That's my micro specialty. I know. Oh, my goodness. I'm just kidding.
I gotta find you something else, Megan. I don't know.
Just kidding. I'm sure there will be something else I could nerd out on.
Yeah. Never a dull moment when we're talking about student loans. So, well, this has been a wonderful episode. I really love podcasting with you because it's just a conversation of all the things that are coming up. And I mean, gosh, you're so intelligent about everything that is happening in the student loan world that I think we do a good job of like breaking this down for clients, helping them better understand what needs to happen. And yeah, these mailbags are the best ones, I think.
I think they're really fun. And you've been flattering me this whole podcast. Thanks, Lauren. You're the best. I love doing podcasts with you. Thanks for joining. And thanks, everybody, for listening in. Shoot us an email if you have any interesting situations happening or anything that you think could be helpful for us to share on the podcast in the future. And we'll catch you in the next one.
Don't forget to go to studentloanplanner.com if you need our help, because I know that there's somebody out there that's been listening to this podcast for years at this point, because we've been around for years at this point, and you've not taken any action. Today should be action day. So don't be afraid to take action and get your student loan plan in place, because payments really will be beginning soon. So have a good day, everybody.